Hello everyone, my name is Remy Kliss and I am a high altitude mountaineer, speaker and sustainability and wellness specialist. And I am a guest on Because It's There podcast with Sarah Kamalo. Please tune in and listen to how I reached rock bottom, discovered my true power and started climbing the highest mountains around the world.
Because It's There with Sarah Kamalo is proudly sponsored by Vuma.
Hello, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. This is Sarah Kamalo on Because It's There. The British mountaineer George Mallory was once asked, why climb Everest? His answer, because it's there. A smart answer and a life's metaphor too. Why bother to excel? Why bother being great? Why bother being a leader? Because in spite of all your fears, what others think of you, your insecurities, we are all born with the ability to climb the biggest mountains in life, literally and figuratively, including those that are in our own heads. And when we do, we don't only build our own lives, we build the people around us, the organizations that we found, and organizations that we work for. And this is Because It's There. And who else, who better to actually talk to us about climbing mountains, about daring to dream, not small dreams, big dreams. It is none other than Remy Kliss. Remy, welcome to Because It's There.
Thank you, Sarah, for having me. I'm so excited to speak to you again.
Absolutely.
Looking forward to getting deeper into some of these juicy topics.
Absolutely. So today we're talking about dreams, daring to dream. Sometimes we stop ourselves and more times than not, we surprise ourselves when we dare to dream big. If your dream is not scaring you, maybe it ain't big enough. Go back to the drawing board, they say. So Remy, I want you to finish this sentence for me. It's really an icebreaker. I climb mountains because...
I love this. So I climb mountains to achieve a higher perspective on the person I want to be and just, the person I'm striving to be. And mountains, they just give me so much inspiration and vision. And, they remind me of my humble place in this great universe we live in. I think that about covers it.
Yeah, absolutely. You are spot on. You realize how much of a speck we are in the bigger scheme of things when you're out there. They are such an amazing teacher.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Remy and really understanding who you are. You know, you've just come back from attempting the Davos Summit, which is exciting, Everest and Lhotse. For those of you that want to know, these are mountains that are next to each other, Everest being the highest in the world, and Lhotse being one of the 8,000ers. And you wanted to do that in one season, which no other South African has actually attempted to do. We know that Louis, for example, Carstens has summited Everest as well as Lhotse during different expeditions. This is a big, ambitious goal that you have, and I want to commend you for it. Although it has eluded you this time, because I know you're going back, take us through your key learnings and what you will do differently when you go back.
Yeah, so I thought I could intro this a bit. I don't think all of the listeners are necessarily climbers, so I'll just explain a little further. So I spent 57 days in the Himalayas, and this, which includes a 14-day trek into base camp. And then you do, the rotations up the mountain to fully acclimatize. You could do one or two, or maybe even three rotations to the various camps. And before we even reached base camp, our team actually went and summited Lhotse East as well, just as an acclimatization peak. So that's why the expedition really takes so long. I think very little people, unless you're a mountaineer, knows how long these expeditions take. And, You know, we reached Camp 4 just above there, so known as the Death Zone. And, you know, you're very familiar with that camp. And, you know, the thing is, Sarah, I felt strong up there. You know, a lot of the Sherpa joked with me and said I have Sherpa blood in me. And, yeah, at Camp 4 and in my tent, I was having a little dance party, hoping for the cyclone. We were in the middle of a cyclone that was wasn't forecast. And this is what hindered our summit attempt. And I was just super positive, super hopeful. I felt strong, you know, felt good. And that's something that actually excites me, because I don't feel too overwhelmed by going back. I'm quite excited to go back, knowing the route now, because I think that's the biggest challenge going into it. So you don't know the route, but now with that unknown out the way, I'm really excited. I can take even more photos, even more videos. And I think, you know me, I love my photojournalism as well as, you know, my writing. So I'm really excited for that aspect. And something which I'm sure you're very familiar as well is that, you know, if it's one thing that mountains have taught us, is that there will always be setbacks along the way. You know, it's part of the deal to some degree, you know. But knowing that, you know, it doesn't make the heartbreak any easier. Like, you know, if you don't reach that formidable peak, your heart is shattered into pieces. Despite knowing, you know, that the summit, going into each climb, the summit's never ever guaranteed. And a lot of these big peaks, you know, you try again. And so despite this, you know, I'm still on track to become the youngest South African to climb the seven summits, and I still plan on doing Everest, Lhotse back to back. But I definitely also need a financial miracle to work in my favor, new sponsors, new partners. This has been the most challenging thing for me on my journeys, actually finding the money, which we can, you know, we can speak a bit about that later. But being younger, obviously, you know, I don't have, you know, I haven't had a long successful corporate career to have obtained all these funds. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think this is a great lesson as well, is the summit, you know, drives us. It's what keeps us focused, keeps us putting one step in front of the next. But it's the climb itself that matters. And I really, really try to, you know, instill that in every day I climb out there. You know, the summit, every day is summit day, you know, it really, really is. So I think that's one of my biggest lessons from the mountains.
I love it. Every day is summit day. I think maybe for our listeners, let's go back to who is Remy Klos, because I think people might not know who Remy is. If we can go back there, I know you are aiming to be the youngest South African to summit the seven summits, which absolutely you're on track to do so. And I'm rooting for you more than ever, you know. But tell our viewers who you are and how did you get into climbing? You could have done anything, sailing, you are in Cape Town, or anything else like that.
So it's quite an interesting journey. You know, I didn't grow up climbing mountains. I suffered through a lot of anxiety and depression as a teenager and a young adult. And, you know, it was only in 2016 when I kind of reached an all-time low in my life that for some reason I decided I wanted to climb Kilimanjaro. And this was before then I climbed Lion's Head maybe once or twice in my life. So I have no idea why I had this calling. And just a few months later, I was standing on the roof of Africa, and I enjoyed the whole process. It was just this instant love affair. And, you know, from that moment, I knew I had found this deep and soulful connection to the mountains. And that's when the journey was kind of, I'd say, was ignited. The spark was ignited, because even after Kili, it wasn't like I was like, okay, I'm going to do the seven summits. This is it. This is my dream. And I think that's what's quite relatable as well, because I think so often in life when you come across people with these big and crazy dreams, you're like, oh my gosh, they've definitely known this their whole life and they've been working towards this their whole life. But, you know, at any point in life, we can have this moment where everything can change and you can redirect your life to a new passion, a new dream. So then after Kilimanjaro, I carried on working in Johannesburg, and then after you know 5-6 years in my corporate job there, I decided to take a sabbatical. My anxiety was just through the roofs. I needed some perspective in my life, and I took a sabbatical. And I did a lot of solo adventure, solo travel. I took all my savings to help support me do this. And did a lot of hiking. I walked the Camino de Santiago, which is an 800-kilometer pilgrimage through Spain. And then I decided, hey, maybe I should climb Elbrus on this sabbatical I'm embarking on. And I did. And again, had an amazing experience. Took myself there, climbed with a bunch of Russians. I climbed with Seven Summits Club, so they're actually the local Russian. They kind of known to have a bit of a rep out there on the mountain of being very crazy. But I had like a very good experience with them. And then still my dream hadn't cemented yet. It was more of a curiosity, a phase of discovery, exploration. And then by the end of that sabbatical year, I decided I wanted to do Aconcagua early in the next year. And I did, and Aconcagua was a big, big mountain to test your altitude, although not technical, as you know. And I did Aconcagua and had a blast. And after Aconcagua, I knew that's I want to do the seven. This is something I'm good at. This is something I just, you know, my heart feels at home out there. And I realized after Aconcagua that the Seven Summits mission was now in full swing.
Fantastic. So, you know, from there, I want to go into you coming back for the first time on the big mountain. Your dream has been, has hit a curveball, right? I don't think it's almost like it's postponed and not denied. Definitely not. What keeps you going in that instance? And I want to relate it to the pandemic. The pandemic has also moved a lot of our expeditions, you know? I know you went to Everest inspired at all, but how are you dealing with the pandemic? How are you dealing with the aftermath of your last attempt? How do you keep going? How do you keep the dream alive as big as it is?
Yeah, and I think this is an important question. Like you say, we can apply it to so many things in life that have been postponed, that have been, you know, pushed back, or that you kind of don't achieve your dream or goal at the beginning. Is, you know, you need to check in with yourself and ask yourself, what is your why? You know, is the ultimate, is the summit your why? Or, you know, what is it more what you get through the journey of climbing? And for me, you know, my why when I climb is it's the mental challenge, it's the physical challenge, and it's something I get nowhere else, you know, in this world. And it's that connection to yourself, to nature, and it's to be in an environment where I'm inspired by the mountain's wisdom. And this has got to do with my why. What keeps me going, what keeps me progressing, is because these are the whys. The you know, my why is to empower and to create an impact. Mm-hmm. And I can do that regardless of, you know, the summit. And I want to keep creating this impact. And that inspires me to continue pushing for my dream. And, you know, like I said, the summit's the cherry on top, and the ego wants this cherry so bad, but you know, the heart knows that it's the journey that's the most important, and it just takes a little bit of time for the ego to get there. But so just to wrap that up, I would say always check in. What is your why? Before a goal, before a summit, what is your why? And that's what will keep you going.
Absolutely. That's very well put. I want to move on to the topic and the theme of this all, dare to dream. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
How do you approach your goals? I mean, this is big, audacious goal. You know, very few people have done so, and you're planning to break a record. How do you approach your goals when you're setting a small one and a big one? Any difference in the two? Please take us through your trend of thought and your process.
Yeah. So I'm quite a free spirit, and I like to follow, you know, my heart and where my dreams and visions take me. So I don't sit down, you know, necessarily and say, you know, I want to achieve this goal by this date. And I think goals change and evolve all the time. And you know, my overarching goal is that of impact and service. So everything feeds into that. But at the beginning of each year, I will have, you know, a list of dreams and things I want to do. And some of them don't have timelines, some of them do. And, you know, this is kind of, you know, just my wish list, should I say. And I'm quite, you know, I love to visualize. I'm quite a spiritual person, quite a connected person to my heart. And so, you know, for me, if I have a big goal, I will visualize it. You know, I will have that, I'll go inward and I'll have that elevated emotion and set that clear intention as if it's happened. And my body responds very well to that. And there's actually, an NLP technique called, we've got the standard SMART goal setting that comes up everywhere, you know, specific, measurable, attainable, your timeline. It's very, very like, it has its benefits for sure. But I think, you know, it can be the timeline aspect as well. If you become too fixated on a timeline, you feel like you let yourself down the whole time when you can't meet a certain goal by a specific time. So for me, there's an NLP technique called WOOP. So WOOP. And WOOP is more in line with what I was talking about, the visualization and all of that, those kind of techniques. So at the beginning, the W, you set your wish. What is it that you want to achieve? And then you have the another O, your outcome. And here, you know, you've got to visualize, you've got to feel it, you've got to close your eyes, see it as if it's happened. You know, what does it feel like? What does it look like? What does it taste like or smell like? Or engage all your senses. And then the next O is the obstacle. So what obstacle can come in the way? And this is more of an internal obstacle. So, you know, maybe it's negative self-talk. Maybe you start doubting yourself, or identify what kind of internal obstacles would maybe arise with wanting to chase this wish or goal. And then the P is the plan. So the plan is then you become very, you know, what is the strategy that I can set in place? And you kind of have a what if statement. So you want to, include your outcomes and your obstacles. So if you achieve your outcome, what obstacle may come in the way? And if it does, what plan can you put in place to get rid of that obstacle or to overcome it? So that technique, I feel like it resonates more with me. And I found it very helpful with working with other people as well.
Absolutely. Actually, that reminds me, you are a coach. I think we're going to get into that as well.
Yes,
in terms of how you're using your mountaineering to help other people. But before we get into that, I want to acknowledge the journey that you've taken us through in terms of yourself and how you got to fall in love with mountaineering, and she realized this is it that you are meant to do, and you want to make it your playground. You know, is there a specific moment that you were like, aha, this is it? Or is it the journey as you just explained it? And if so, can you take us through, was it a spiritual journey? Was it emotional? Did you have to consult? Take us through that thinking and the process in terms of you getting to your why and exciting.
Yeah, I think we covered this a little bit with who is Remy and how it all started. You know, it wasn't a realization on a specific date. It was a journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after each climb, I gained the confidence and I gained the knowledge and the skill. And I realized that it was something I was good at and that I wanted to then chase that dream after climbing Aconcagua. And, you know, it scares me all the time, fears and doubts creep in. But I think, you know, it's so important to continue to chase this dream because it makes me feel more alive than ever. And like you say, if a dream doesn't scare you a little bit, you know, you're not dreaming big enough. So,
yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, let's go to my next and my favorite question, where I don't need to explain to you who a Sherpa is, but we all have Sherpas in our lives, whether it's on the mountain or, you know, in our lives, personal career. Who has been the most important Sherpa in your journey?
Yeah, for me, I think going with the concept of Sherpa, and they're so... they place so much value on family, and it's exactly my case as well. It wasn't one specific person, it's been my entire family. You know, my entire family have supported me in my life 110%. They held space for me when I was diagnosed for depression. They listened to me when I started telling them I wanted to climb the Seven Summits, and they're like, oh, but this, who are you? What is this? Is it dangerous? You know, everyone, you know, from my younger teenage sisters, they've had a Sherpa role in my life, to my mom, to my, you know, my brother. And that's something I'm probably most grateful for, to have the support system of my family.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of the mountains, which Sherpa or is there a coach or somebody that's played a big role in supporting you in your climbing journey?
My climbing journey. Yes. Well, I mean, it's been a few. So as soon as I knew I wanted to do the Seven, I started reaching out to all the South African climbers, and you were at the top of the list, and we had that amazing coffee together here when you were in Cape Town. So, I mean, yourself, I reached out to Sibu. I have, you know, done some skills training with Sibu and some of his friends out near Joburg. Louis Carstens, I met him in Joburg. He lent me gear when I wanted to climb Aconcagua. And you know, I just was so overwhelmed by how open and welcoming this kind of South African climbing community was, and how everyone just wanted to help and share. So yeah.
That is amazing. So with that, we're going to take a little bit of a break and thank our sponsors that make this podcast possible.
In a world of possibilities, our choices define who we are. We can choose to simply get things done, but we choose to make a difference. We can choose to go far, or we can choose to go further. We choose great over good every time, because we can. And because we can, we must. We don't just act, we activate. When we move forward. Instead of simply providing access, we see the potential for success. Because where others see data, we see dreams. To us, connecting means more than plugs and ports. We exist to empower ordinary people to do extraordinary things. We aim higher, and we choose to do more. We don't wait for opportunities. We create them. Our choices define us, And when faced with the choice, we always choose extraordinary.
Now, let's contextualize Remy's world. As a sustainability and wellness specialist who is also a certified NLP coach, what are the key lessons that you continue to draw from your mountaineering, which differentiates your offering to others in the market?
Well, you know, I love this question because, you know, people are like, high altitude mountaineering, like, isn't that dangerous? You know, they kind of question your intention. Like, and yes, you know, there's so many ways you can die up on the mountain. You know, it's a huge risk we take up there. But as you also know, it's really, it's a sport like no other, you know, where so many things are tested, your endurance, your mental persistence, your flexibility, your leadership, your teamwork, all at once, all in an environment which is so extreme, but also an environment where you can be so inspired by your surroundings. And, you know, and another thing which I absolutely love about high altitude mountaineering, which you don't really get anywhere else in other sports, is, you know, the emphasis is not about rushing at all. The emphasis is just placing one step in front of the next. And it's the power of your present moment that is going to get you through. And it's not a thinking about, you know, the camp you've come from, the camp you're going to. And this is such a powerful thing to take back into the real world. The power of our presence is ultimately going to get us to where we want to go to. And like we discussed, you know, there's going to be setbacks along the way. We're going to have to adapt. Mountains teach you like in a second. Setback. Okay, get back up. How can we readjust, reset, refocus to get to our goal? Yeah. So, you know, high altitude mountaineering has really become my biggest classroom for learning. And I take those lessons and help people, you know, also to see how capable everyone is, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. It's the biggest classroom, actually, and it's unforgiving if you come unprepared.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
anyway. And that's exactly on that point as well. You know, like, mountains don't care what age you are, what sex you are, your height, your weight. And I love that because I'm always on a mission to break down stereotypes that society has often created. And this is something that we can also bring back into our daily lives. You know, like, yeah, you know, we have feel like all this pressure or that society tells us we need to be a certain way or do a certain thing. And mountains, you know, the mountains don't care for that. Because I often get told I don't look like a high altitude mountaineer. You know, I'm there wearing like a floral dress, you know, barefoot, like
your sunflower. You know,
sunflower power. And, you know, that's such a great lesson to bring back as well. Like, don't, you know, you're so capable regardless of stereotypes. And it's something I feel very passionate about.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. Yes. So you talk openly about your depression and how your family has supported you through that, and you specialize in mental health, which has become quite topical, especially after Naomi Osaka having withdrawn from the French Games for her sanity, and she actually said it's okay not to be okay. You know, the Prince and of Wessex openly talking about it, Oprah talking about, you know, mental wellness. Do you believe this will impact how we all look at mental wellness as a society?
I totally do. You know, speaking up is now considered extremely brave and courageous. And with people of such high status and power, it makes it more relatable. And that's something also that, you know, I hope to share with my message, and something I'm so passionate about is like you said, is the mental health. And I didn't have this, you know, I had suffered through depression and anxiety for so long. And then I was able to still have these big and crazy dreams, you know? So it's like, the tools, how can we access those tools for everyone to use? And by people, these types of people speaking up, you know, and asking for help, everyone's realizing it's a strength and it's okay. If these people are doing it at such high levels, you know, okay, maybe I'm not weak if I ask for help. And, you know, I also feel like in the business world, slowly it's shifting. Maybe we need to work on the banks. I'm not sure about that, but it's shifting from that, you know, that you have to hustle, no sleep, you know, only 2 hours of sleep. That mentality is kind of shifting and people are frowning upon that and saying we need balance in life to be able to actually perform well and efficiently. It's not, we need to have balance. So like I said, I think, you know, just speaking about this and normalizing it all is just going to create such a big difference going forward.
Absolutely. And when did you start talking about mental wellness? Was it easy for you, or was it something you got to do after a few reflections, after maybe something happened for you to just confidently, because you did talk about mental wellness before all these Osakas, the Prince and so forth. How did you get there before the world caught on?
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a journey. I think when I was diagnosed in school with depression, it wasn't something that was spoken about, almost something that was kind of, you know, deal with it in the background kind of thing, you know. But again, I had the support of my family. And then navigating that through my adult years, I don't think I was in a position where I could properly identify with speaking to everyone about it. Like it wasn't even, I hadn't internalized everything. And I think it was, to be honest, when I had that turning point in 2016, when I climbed Kili and I reached an all-time low, and it became very clear to me that this was something that I needed to speak about and share, because I think a lot of people could really benefit from the message. So it started becoming easier for me to talk about because I realized how much of an impact it's going to make on other people.
Absolutely. Take me through your training. How do you traditionally prepare for a climb? I know you. I've seen you do yoga. I've seen you hiking, and I've seen you showering at the waterfall. How do you prepare for such a big, audacious goal?
Yeah, I'm a bit unique in my approach, like many things. I'm very intuitive. I have this basket. I like to call it like this basket or packet, and it's like a lucky packet, you know, like, so I pick out what I feel like, what I choose. Usually I know how many hours I want to get through in a week, and then I'll check in with myself and say like, okay, I feel like strength training today, or I feel like cycling tomorrow, or, you know, I feel like doing a long hike. Yes, there's a bit of planning involved when you want to go leave Cape Town and do like a multi-day hike or something like that, but I'm super intuitive. Some weeks I'll spend more time on my feet and aim for mileage. Other weeks I'll be more focused on strength and yoga. And each of these disciplines provide me with so much joy and fun in my life that it really, you know, I wake up every morning feeling excited. As soon as I'm told, okay, you need to reach this heart rate on this day, and you have to be doing spinning while achieving all these stats and data and all of this. So, you know, it takes the joy out of it for me. So that's a very long answer to your very short question.
That's amazing. So Remy, you know, you can relate to this, and I hope you are comfortable to share. Mountaineering is an expensive sport. I mean, most take so long, years, you know, and this is globally, not just locally, to do the summits, not because they're not strong enough, because of funding, right? What strategies can you share, you know, that you've followed, that you've seen work, that anyone that's listening on that wants to do these things can learn from you?
Yeah. So for me, my biggest, you know, as you know, it is the biggest challenge out of this all. It's so overwhelming, Sarah. Oh my God. Anyway, so it's about network. I was, as you know, I'm also a public speaker, which happened, you know, through just unfolded through me being sharing my journey more, being very open about who am I, what do I stand for, started getting noticed as being someone who can speak very comfortably in front of audiences. And this actually really catapulted my ability to network, and it provided me with this platform for so many more people to connect with me and my journey and my story. And so many people come up to me and be like, wow, that really inspired me, that, you know, XYZ. And it's the people who I've met through these talks that have actually been the ones who are now investing in me. Companies don't blind sponsor. You can't just send a proposal to, you know, X bank and hope to get the money. It just doesn't work like that anymore. People don't really care so much necessarily about the flag on the summit. You know, they want to know you, who you are, and they want to know what value you can give back. Can you coach in return? Can you provide some sustainability and wellness advice? You know, it's mutually beneficial journey. And it's definitely become exponentially harder than it was, I think, maybe 10 years ago. It's kind of what I've gathered, but yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the novelty of it is gone, and everybody's looking at what's in it for me. So you're absolutely spot on in that respect. So you are dedicated to a holistic approach to life, focusing on training the body, the mind, and spirit, and believe that this has allowed you to bring a balance and flow, as you say, to your life, right?
Yes.
What does this mean, and how can others adopt this same approach?
Yeah, and I think the listeners would have kind of picked that up on me, that I'm a bit different in how I approach things. And yeah, the word flow is one of my values, and it's like, how can we optimize ourselves to be efficient, effective? You know, time falls away and you're just in this flow state, you know? And for me, the body, mind, and spirit, it's all interconnected, and we can't expect to be focused just on the body when training and expect to be a great athlete. It's what are you feeding the soul and the spirit as well in the process that's actually going to make you, your body stronger, and then feed into your ability to perform better. So it's that relationship and understanding that it's all connected, and not neglecting any one of them.
Absolutely. I like that. You know, let's move into leadership. I mean, this podcast is about really leadership of self, leadership of others. And as a female leader, what does leadership mean to you? And how important is leadership at high altitude, especially when the stakes are high? The weather is going crazy, the client wants to go, the client knows that, you know, when I go down, I need to get another million rand to come back here. How does leadership play a role in this instance?
Yeah. Well, I have this saying, I've kind of used it a few times, and it can be used in many contexts, and it's very applicable in this case as well. And the saying is grit and grace. So, you know, leadership is a lot about grit. It's about the endurance and the perseverance, and it's the passion. And, you know, it's that laser focused mindset. That's the grit. And leaders do need to have all of those characteristics, but you can't just successfully lead on the mountain being very military and being very, you know, push. It's not going to lend well to being a good leader. So for me, it's also about, so the grit needs to be equally complemented with the grace. And the grace is the gratitude, being grateful that you're out there, being grateful to your team, you know, and it's about being positive. Grace is a positivity, you know. For me, I think that positivity is the foundation of my courage. I'm super positive out there. And this is, for me, I think it's very important for a leader to also have this a positive mindset. And yeah, so it's this grit and grace, it's this duality that is needed in a good leader.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is a off field, I suppose, question. As you were speaking, I was reflecting on the podcast that you have, or broadcast that you were sending out there while you were climbing. And I tried to put myself in your shoes when you made that decision that Remy, it's time to go home. Can you take us through your emotions, your mindset at that point, and how you managed to say, it's okay, I am going to come back next year or the year after or whenever?
Yeah, luckily due to, you know, a few circumstances, it wasn't while I was still climbing down the mountain that we knew it was over for sure. There was still hope, and I'm actually really grateful for that hope, because I climbed down the mountain with hope as opposed to climbing down the mountain with sadness. And I think that upon reflection now, that was such a gift. It was only later at base camp when we were given the ultimate no, and it took a while to process. And I think it was easier to the degree that we were in it together. It was our whole team, you know, a lot of us, and there's almost shared comfort in shared grief. So it made it a little easier that we were all in it together. So yeah, I think that about covers your question. I mean, it must be, I respect you so much for your resilience and going back over and over and dealing with that kind of pain over and over. It's hugely admirable.
Absolutely. I call it failing forward. I've come up with a way. I sit and say, what did I learn from this? Am I better than I came in? That's my reason. I'm going to celebrate that. And I'm going to ignore everything else and focus on that and get excited, which is something you mentioned, about how I can use these learnings for my next expedition. And I focus on
that.
And that is important. And thank you for sharing your experience in that respect. So my last question, you know, what has been your best challenge or your best failure? I think challenge sounds like a better word. Has it propelled you forward?
I'm glad you changed the word failure to challenge for me, because as well, there's so much stigma around this word failure, right? And for me, I like to reframe the word as a setback.
Yeah.
Or, you know, instead of failing, we could say falling, because you always get back up when you fall, right? You always
Absolutely.
Do. So sometimes the fall might be harder than others, but you get back up. So I often use the word setback instead of failing. So the biggest, in the context of failure, or, you know, rolling with that for a minute, I think it would be failing to have showed up for myself, or failing to have asked for help. And I think this is something that people really overlook as being considered a failure. It's like, I was in such a dark place, and, you know, sometimes I, you know, was unable to show up for myself and unable to treat myself the way, with kindness and compassion, the way I would treat others, you know. But in terms of, you know, maybe setbacks, the term may be used a bit differently, I would say the biggest setback, which we've said, you know, just this sponsorship game, you know, it's just you put everything into it all the time, and you never leave any leaf unturned. You know, I'm there on Zoom calls, chatting to this person, getting advice from that person. This person's referring me somewhere else. You know, I'm giving it 150%, and for every 100 no's, you get maybe half a yes. So, So that's been the biggest setback.
Absolutely.
And yeah.
And how has this helped you move forward? Has it helped you find new ways to position your proposals? How have you used those setbacks to make you a better Remy?
Yeah, I think it's great, you know, just the ability to network, which is so applicable in all aspects of in life. It's just to have that, you know, being comfortable to speak to people of all walks in life and to share your story, because people want that authentic story to connect to. And you have to be open about it, because that's what people are resonating with these days. Mm-hmm. And so it's rolling with that. It's like trusting myself and my authentic story that someone is going to also be in a position where they can financially support me through believing in my story as well. So just trusting myself and just continuing to persevere.
Absolutely. That is fantastic. So Remy, if people want to follow your work, want to get involved, want to learn from you, where can they reach you? And what exciting projects are you working on that people can tap into?
So I'm a very avid photographer and writer. So I share a lot on Instagram. It's just at Remy Kloss, RemyKlossos. And the same for Facebook. I have the same handle there. And I have a website as well. It's just remykloss.com. And anyone can reach out to me on any platform. My email is there on my website. Or on Instagram, send me a message on Facebook. I'm very open and I love to engage with my community all the time. And yeah, go have a look and see and be a part of the journey, because I do share quite a lot of it out there on those platforms.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Remy, for making the time to come in and chat to us. And everybody, I hope you enjoyed that. This is what I always talk about. It's people that are deciding that they're not going to be ordinary, because inwardly, we are all uniquely extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And she's daring to dream. Go search. What is that dream that you've been hiding behind your cupboards? What is that dream that you've been so scared to verbalize? Come on, share it with us and go for it, because it is yours to achieve. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.